Okay, morning of today's daf and chulin to Kuf Yud 110. We are in the bottom of Kuf Testament Beis. We are in the middle of discussion of Chal. Chal is the udder of the animal. The udder of the animal is a fascinating organ vis-a-vis the halachas of basa b'chalav. As we started the eighth parak, well into the eighth parak of the Masechta. So we know that the Torah prohibits the cooking, eating, and benefiting from meat and milk that was cooked together. The Yisurim of the Torah regarding basa b'chalav, it has very strict parameters in terms of what's basar and what's chalav, what is considered meat and what's considered milk. We're going to be discussing later in the parak, not today, later in the parak in terms of the very definition of milk. What's milk? What if I separate milk? Let's say I take out the curds and I separate the curds from the whey. Which aspect of that is going to be considered milk? That's a discussion we're having later on. So in other words, in the Yisurim basar b'chalav, so we have very clear definitions, parameters of what's meat and what's milk. In terms of the definition of what's milk, so as we learned in yesterday's daf, the definition of milk is only milk after it has exited the udder of the animal, or otherwise stated, after it exited the animal. In other words, the udder of milk that has not yet been expressed out of the udder of the animal, min ha-Torah, is not considered chalav. And so that means that min ha-Torah, that we're not talking about chalav, basar b'chalav. We're talking about, at best, an issa d'rabbanan. At best, an issa d'rabbanan. So what is the status regarding chal? So the status with chal is ostensibly, you can cook it, you can eat it. It's going to have a little bit of milk residue in there. It's going to more than milk residue. It'll have pockets of milk in there. But that milk is not halachically milk in terms of the halachas of basar b'chalav, and it would be fine. And in fact, the Mishnah yesterday kind of spoke to this idea. Now, the Mishnah is very short, and the Mishnah does not give forward a lot of information. The Mishnah, as we learned yesterday on Kuf Testament Aleph, writes, Chal Koro Umotias Chal Bo. So what you do with the Chal is you tear it open, you remove the Chalev, and then you go on and cook it. Presumably, that's what the Mishnah means. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe, Lo Koro, now if I don't tear it open, ain't all very love, so then there's no violation. Now, how do you read the Mishnah? So yesterday we had two ways to read the Mishnah. Both of them quoted in the name of Rav. That's actually going to be important for later this morning. It's important in of itself, but it's also going to be important for later this morning. There are two ways Rav understands the Mishnah. The first way Rav understood the Mishnah, this goes back to yesterday's daf, I'm just reviewing. The first way he understands the Mishnah is that when he says that there is, when the Mishnah says, Eino over alav, Eino over alav, it's totally fine. It's mutal lagamre. Meaning the chal is totally permissible, even if I didn't tear it open, even if I didn't try to squeeze out the milk that was inside of the udder, it'd be totally okay. That's one way that Rav reads the Mishnah. Eino over alav means eino over alav umutter. Another way that Rav read the Mishnah is that no, even though min haTorah you're not violating an isser, but eino over alav va'aser. But still, there's a rabbinic isser that one is not allowed to cook it unless he first cuts it open and tries to squeeze out all the milk. There is a Rashi, I'm going to point to the Rashi in just a moment. There is a Rashi that seems to make a distinction between whether or not we're going to be cooking the chal versus we're going to be roasting the chal. I'm going to show you the Rashi in just a moment. Yesterday we also noted, and this is where we ended up yesterday, we also noted that there's going to be a difference between milk that's found in the udder versus milk that's found in the stomach. In other words, milk that's found in the udder, that means we're talking about the mother, obviously, who is either pregnant or just gave birth, and therefore has pockets of milk contained in the udder. That milk inside of the udder is not chalav min haTorah vis-a-vis the halachas of basar b'chalav. Good. What we also learned yesterday is that, let's say we, after shechting a calf, we discover milk in its stomach. Why is there milk in the stomach? Very simple, because the calf was nursing. So if I find milk in the stomach, that's chalav min haTorah. Why? As we pointed out yesterday. Because once the calf has been nursing from the mother, that's milk now that's been expressed out of the mother. And therefore, that's chalav d'oraisa. Now that's chalav d'oraisa in the keva, in the stomach of that calf animal. So now we're talking about basar b'chalav. That's an isra of basar b'chalav ben haTorah. And that obviously presents a problem. So what we have over here is a very clear distinction between something which is chalav min haTorah, that's any milk that is removed out of the udder, and anything which is chalav, anything which has not been expressed from the udder, and at best it's chalav midrabanan, it may not be usher at all. Okay. All the stated now, ketzad koro. So let's get to the Gemara now, where the Gemara asked the question, well, how do I tear it open? meaning, again, the Mishnah really succinct. The Mishnah doesn't give us much information. And so the Mishnah says, tear it open, and what do I do? I'm Rav Yehuda Karoshasi Ve'er V'tocha B'kosa. So the Gemara quotes B'shem Rav Yehuda, that what you do is you cut it on an X. In other words, you score it like lengthwise and crosswise, like an X, and you press it against the wall, and that is going to drain out all the milk that's needed to be drained. Rav Elazar gives instructions to his attendant. Rav Elazar was totally prepared to eat the chal, and he says to his attendant, just tear it open and I'm going to eat it. So my kamash malam must need it. Nisa the Gemara says, okay, it's a nice story, right? But it's not any different than what we already know. So what he says is that what the chiddush is over here is that you don't need, here, Brian. You don't need Shesiv Erev and you don't need Tach B'Kostel to press against the wall. Meaning all he required is just simply some sort of slicing of it and that would be fine.
Because it's roasting.
Yeah, come on. Okay. So that's all you need. Interesting Rashi. Let's do the Rashi inside over here. Kamash Malan. Kriya Ba'ama Ka'amarlay. In other words, the instructions of Rav Elazar was just Kriya Ba'ama. All I simply need to do is just tear and that's it. Meaning not what Rav Yehuda reported. Rav Yehuda said, Shesiv Erev V'tach B'Kosel, that I need to cut both lengthwise and crosswise, and I need to press it against the wall. Rav Elazar does not require that. Rashi continues. Lefisha Achalav HaNotev Yotze Lamato Mishiyatza V'Harehu Chalav Lo Chazav V'lo Bay Shesiv Erev. Because what's going to happen is that any milk that's inside, it's just going to just simply drip out. And once it drips out and it's not going to come back, there's no problem. I don't need the cutting of Shesiv Erev. Ella Likadera. And Rashi points out now as follows. Now here we get to a really interesting sheet of Rashi. Rashi says that there is a requirement to Shesiv Erev. That's if you're going to cook it. If you plan on cooking it, so then you have to cut it two ways. You have to cut it crosswise, you have to cut it lengthwise, and you have to press it against the wall. Yes, meaning that's what Rav Yehuda taught us, and that's accurate, and that's when you plan on cooking it. There is certainly a need to try to drain out all the milk contained in the udder for a very simple reason. Rashi writes, Rashi writes over here because here's what's going to happen. If I cook it in a pot, what's going to end up happening, of course, is that the milk is going to come out. When that milk comes out of the chal, so now it's going to be chalav min haTorah. Now, it really forces me to think, right? And you're now thinking like me. It really forces you to think. Now, at this point in time, the animal's dead already. In other words, the chal has already been taken off the animal, meaning this is chal of shchuta, chal of a shechted animal. And so now, Rashi writing over here that when I take it and put it in a pot, and now because of the heat of the pot, the milk's going to come out, and now it's going to be chal of min haTorah. It is super interesting. But Rashi writes it, and Rashi writes it very clearly. Harehu chal of gamur, v'chozer mismashal imo. And then what's going to happen is that it's as it's sitting in the pot, the milk is going to come back and go back into it and create now an iser of basa b'chalav. La'el shabishlu umutar b'tzli kamar. And previously what we were describing was roasting. D'tzli nami kari bishl. Now, the fact that earlier it said the word bishl and Rashi's saying, and I'm translating that as tzli, Rashi says, that doesn't bother me. Because d'chsibet divrei yamin v'yivash la'pesach. Because we do find, even in Tanakh, when describing the act of roasting, sometimes it's referred to as bishul, and it's not so bad to describe bishul, an act of sleaze bishul. Now Rashi quoting the Pasuk in Divrei Yamim as it relates to the Karban Pesach. Like rule number one regarding the Karban Pesach. Or if it's not rule number one, it's only rule number two. But it's high up there. Rule number one is that the Karban Pesach has to be roasted. So the Pasuk in Divrei Yamim says we're going to cook it. Cooking is a loose term. It just simply means that we're going to prepare it. But of course, the method of preparation is roasting. So Rashi writes over here that when it comes to roasting the chal, you just simply need to slice it and allow somewhere for the milk to drain out. And once it drains out, you're fine. When you're cooking it, then you have to go through the process of shesi v'erev, cutting it like an X and pressing it against the wall. And that's what you need to do when you plan on cooking it. That's Shita's Rashi in our Gemara. Okay, we are on Kuftes Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud, and now an exchange between Yalta and her husband. Yalta, Probably was the daughter of the Reish Galusa. All right, we don't see that clearly in the Gemara, but she probably was. Certainly she was married to Rav Nachman, that part we know for sure. Rav Nachman was the son-in-law to the Reish Galusa, so it kind of makes sense that Yalta was the daughter. That you know, when you piece the puzzle together, that's definitely the sense that you get. Right, Yalta, right. Yalta is certainly a personality. That we can easily say. I refer you, I'm not going to go through the Gemara now, but I refer you to the very end of the seventh parak of Brachos. Right? You want to see another incident, another episode with the Yalta, so open up to the end of the seventh parak of Brachos, and you will see a story over there with the Yalta. Okay, it will give you an idea, a sense of her personality. With that in mind, so our Gemara over here, I'm just going to go over one Gemara today, our Gemara, and that is the following, Yalta and her husband, Rav Nachman. Amar le Yalta le Rav Nachman michti, kol da'asalan rechmana sharolan. So she has a fascinating yesod, and that is that anything that the Torah prohibits for us, the Torah is going to give us a way in which we can enjoy that prohibition. Meaning there is nothing intrinsic in a prohibition that makes it prohibited other than the Torah asking it, which obviously is a big deal. But there is going to definitely be a means or a way to enjoy it in some permissible fashion. So we'll give you a number of examples.
Something complicated.
Right. We'll give you a number of examples. Sharolan kavase, asolan dama sharolan kavda. So number one, Torah prohibits blood. On the other hand, enjoy the liver. Now, even though the liver is saturated with blood, and when you're eating the liver, you're essentially tasting the blood, but okay, the liver is totally permissible. The end of today's daf, really more tomorrow's daf, we're going to be talking about the treatment of the liver and how to prepare the liver. But anyway, it's basically blood. It's blood. And meanwhile, the Torah allows us, we're going to, tomorrow's daf. Okay. But the Torah gives us a way, a means, an avenue in which we can actually taste what blood would taste like. Nida dam tahor. If a man wants to be with his wife while she's in Nida, obviously that's a prohibition, a karis penalty. However, there are times in her life where even though she's discharging, he can be with her specifically during dam tahor. So in other words, he can have that experience in a fashion which is mutter. Chela behema, chela chaya. Similarly, we're not allowed to eat the chel of a behema, but you want to know what it tastes like? No problem. Shech techaya, a wild animal, and the chel of a wild animal is mutter, as we've said already numerous times.
Does it taste
the same?
Yeah.
From the Gemara, the answer is yes. From my own personal experience, I don't know. So, sorry, moment of honesty. Chazir, so again, so the chazir, the pig, of course, is aser. But mucha de shibuta, So but if you eat this particular whatever it is, it's a type of fish. It's a kosher fish, obviously. So it's going to have the same taste. So gerusa, if a person wants to eat the gerusa is some sort of non-kosher bird. And if you want to eat it, and obviously you can't. Sorry, if you want to taste it, so what you do is lishan de kavra. So you have a particular type of, again, it seems to be some other kind of fish. That has the same taste as this bird. Okay, it's amazing, by the way, that we just identified two species of fish, one tasting like chazer and the other tasting like bird. Usually, fish tastes like fish, but again, this is my lack of knowledge at play over here. Aishas,
you
correct. Agreed. Aishas ish grusha. Now, to be with a woman who's currently married with another man, that's an Isser in the Torah. Not only is it an Isser in the Torah, it's Chayv Misa. It's also one of the Aseres HaDibros. Okay, that we're all familiar with. But again, to have something comparable, a woman is divorced. A woman is divorced as a woman that has been with another man. It's a similar idea, and obviously that's Mutar, unless you're a Kohen. Grusha Bechaye Bala. Sorry. Eishes Ach, a lot of examples. Eishes Ach Yavama. So to be with your brother's sister, so she's one of the Arayis in the Torah, that's going to be prohibited. However, under limited circumstances, not only are you allowed to be with your brother's wife, but you are supposed to be with your brother's wife under the context of Yibum. Good. Kusis Yafas Torah. To be with a non-Jewish woman, so that's an issue in the Torah. Yafas Torah is, again, heter, mitzvah. Let's call it heter. So it's a little bit easier to handle. So in other words, but again, there is an allowance of the Torah for a man to be with a non-Jewish woman at battlefield when he sees a woman and his Yetzer Hara is getting the best of him. So, but okay, but in other words, the Torah gives away, right? Imagine the man has a Yetzer Hara for a kusis, and he's like, okay, what do I have to do? I have to now join the army, go to battle. Okay, but in other words, if the man has the Yetzer Hara, so fine. There's a means, there's a method. So, Beinu Lamecha Bisra Bechalba. So, after now citing her numerous examples, I should have counted, there's so many. After citing numerous examples of this idea, where there clearly is a way to taste Isser. The Torah, built in, hardwired into the Torah, is all these Yisurim, but a method, a means in which we can enjoy the Yisurim in a manner which is permissible. Mm-hmm. So he says, oh, she says to him, okay, now good. Now I'm ready for my cheeseburger. Let's go. let me have the cheeseburger. Let me try it. There's got to be a way for me to do so. So good. So that was her demand. But in the context of our Gemara, meaning if we weren't learning our Gemara right now, and I pose you this question, well, how do you eat a kosher cheeseburger? So we would rack our brains, meaning, in other words, the answer right now, right? The answer right now is right in front of us because we're learning the Gemaras. But if we didn't have the context, I'd say this about myself, I'd be like a little bit hard-pressed to like come up with the right answer. But we know what the right answer is, and Amalu Rav Nachman Latavche Zvikelu Kachle. So Rav Nachman says to his attendant, okay, my wife wants cheeseburger, good. So take the udder of an animal and roast it. And Zvikelu Kachle. So the Gemara says, okay, but Rav Nachman's instructions were just simply roast it. What about the tearing it open? How lekadera? Ah, so this fits in beautifully to the Rashi we learned together. So Rav Nachman says the idea of tearing it open and trying to drain out all the milk inside, that's if you plan on cooking it. So vahakatani shibishlo, dieven lechatchilalo. Okay, what about the lashon of the Mishnah shibishlo? So who didn't afil lechatchila? So the Gemara says no. Even lechatchila, one would be allowed to roast it. And the fact that it says, it sounds like it's bidieven, it's only a din bidieven, that's only because of the contrast between the halacha of chal and the halacha of keva, meaning the brisa we learned in yesterday's daf. The brisa discussing chal, obviously that would be permitted because the milk inside is not chal of midaraisa. As opposed to the kevas we discussed in the beginning of Shir today, as we learned in yesterday's daf, that is chalav da'araisa, and therefore that would be an iser da'araisa to cook the two together. That's why with the keva, you have to drain it. And if I don't drain it, it's not going to be good. So only because we're contrasting those two halachas, does the reading of the braisa as it relates to chal seem to indicate that lichatchila, you need to cut it open. But that's not even true. In other words, for roasting, it's not necessary. Okay, you just need somewhere for the milk to drain during the roasting process. Okay, Adkan, that takes us now basically to not to the end of the sugya. The sugya is really going to go on, but we basically have it now. The idea behind chal is that if we plan on roasting it, so then we just simply need somewhere for the milk to drain in order for the milk to drain out. But any residue milk inside is totally fine, totally permissible. In fact, Rav Nachman, in response to his wife's demands that she wants to taste basa b'chalav, so Rav Nachman says, okay, let's roast a chal. And clearly the idea is that there is going to be some sort of trace amount of milk in the udder, and that's perfectly fine. That's totally legitimate. Okay. We are now Kufyut Amad Aleph, and we are two lines down, Kisalek Rebbe Elazar. And we're going to be discussing now various menhagim about the consumption of the chal. We've just learned together that mi'ikar adin, it's allowed to be consumed. It's allowed to be prepared, allowed to be consumed. There may be a difference between when I cook it versus when I roast it. And according to Rashi, I'll say it's stronger. There is a difference whether I cook it or whether I roast it. But clearly, the halacha, mi'ikar adin, allows for its consumption. That's the ikar adin, that's the halacha. And as we come across the upcoming Gemaras, we're going to see that there were various menhagim. Some people had the minhag, as we're going to see in just a moment, of not eating it at all. Meaning because it resembles basa b'chalav, and because of all the harchakos, all the various fences and gedarim that are placed to prevent us from basa b'chalav, so some had the minhag not to eat it. Okay, and we'll see that upcoming. Kisalek Rabbi Elazar Ashkech Eliziri Amalei Ikatan De'asne L'Rav Chal. So, Rabbi Elazar goes to Eretz Yisrael and he finds the Ziri and he asks him, let me ask you a question. Who taught Rav about Chal? Now, what does Rav say about Chal? So we know that from yesterday's daf. You go back to yesterday's daf, you look at the top of Kuf Tesamud Beis, and you'll see that Rabbi Zera quotes Rav saying his halacha regarding Chal. Now, to be fair, there were two versions of what Rav said. So which version are we asking about right now? So if you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi writes over here, Rashi, third line down, Da'afi l'Rav Chal, Yesh kan mishashana l'Rav Chal, Shebishla below kriya aser ba'achila, V'lishna basra d'Rav ha'vashmina le'le Rebbe Lazar. So Rebbe Lazar caught wind of the second version. Now in the second version of Rav, if I don't cut it open and I cook it without having cut it open, I'm not allowed to eat the chal. That's the second version of Rav.
Cooking here means sleep.
Seemingly cooking over here means cooking. It would seem to mean that. So the so who taught him that? So achve l'Rav Yitzchak bar Avudimi. So fingers were pointed, and fingers now were pointed in the direction of Rabbi Yitzchak, who is the one responsible for having taught Rav the halacha of chal. Amale ani lo shenisu lo chal koliker. So Rav Yitzchak, after being pointed out as being the Rebbe of Rav and this halacha. So Rav Yitzchak simply says, wasn't me. I didn't teach him anything about Chal. The Rav Bika Matzah V'Gad Darba. Now, as far as Rav being Machmir, so that had to do with Rav on his own. It was Rav's own initiative that got him to the conclusion that Chal should not be eaten if it was not prepared. Again, preparation of the Chal, when you cook it, is that you got to open it up, you got to press it against the wall, you got to try to drain out all the milk that you possibly can. If you don't do that, so, is it mutter, is it aser? So, in the second version of Rav, it's aser. But, as Rav Yitzchak now explains, that was a chumrah imposed by Rav based on his own initiative. So, does Rav have the ability to make a chumrah? The answer, obviously, is yes. Okay, good. Why did he make a chumrah? The Gemara goes on to explain. So, V'Rav Bika Matzah V'Geder Bageder. The Rav Ikla L'Tat Lapush. So, Rav went to a town that I never heard of. But that's fine. So Shamilahu Isasa de Karmala Chaverta Riva de Bisra Kamachal Babai Libishule. And he hears a conversation, a casual conversation taking place between members of the community of this town, and the conversation, he was shocked by the conversation. One woman says to another woman, how much milk goes into this recipe that I'm cooking? I'm making a meat dish. And just can you remind me, please, how much milk should go in? And they clearly had no regard whatsoever for the halachas of Basar B'Chalav. They were blatant about their violation of this isser. And Amar lo gemir, de basa b'chalav aser. He says the lack of education in this town is staggering. So Rav stayed there. Not only did he educate, but on top of that, he also made a geder. He made a gzera. A gzera de rabbanan. Now, the gzera de rabbanan was for everybody, for that particular town. Sounds like that particular town. That would be my best guess. But the idea over here is that when a person is lax in a particular area, so the way to correct is not just simply say, okay, correct, but basically to move over and like really push him hard in the other direction, and hopefully that'll create balance. Okay, interesting, by the way. I'm raising the question. I don't know the answer. Was this a permanent ban? Was it a temporary ban just to adjust the dial in terms of making sure they become more sensitive to the issues of Basar B'Chalav? That part's I'm not clear about. But anyway, that what you heard from Rav when he says that if I didn't prepare the chal and I cook it without preparation, I'm not allowed to eat it. So that's a din d'rabbanan, and not only a din d'rabbanan, but a chumra imposed by Rav based on the episode that we just learned together. Rav Kahana Masdik Ahachi. Now, this is the story that we just learned together, is Rav Kahana's version. Rabbi Yosef bar Abba Masni, Anak Chal Shemanika Shanisilo, Umi Pupulo Sherebi Chia Shanale Chal Stam. So, in another version, Rabbi Yosef bar Abba's version, what Rav was talking about was Chal Shemanika. He was talking about an udder that was saturated with milk, right? The mother was nursing. And so the mother was in a state of nursing, and so its udder was saturated with milk. And under those circumstances, because of the excess of milk in that particular udder, so Rav was Machmir. And what Rabbi Chia says is, you know what? If Rav is going to be machmir in that scenario, I think it's best if we just in general take a more machmir position. So basically, what we have in this version is a smaller chumra by Rav, which was expanded by Rabbi Chia.
But was the Rabbi Chia Rav's teacher?
Yeah.
How could that be like that?
Yeah, I know. I know. I hear that. Rashi, a very interesting Rashi over here. And we talk about Pulsar Rabbi Chia, Shu Mechudad Me'od. Rabbi Chia was very sharp. Or maybe Ma'atzma v'kasav shetamidav mechudadim kamoso kishachaz v'shana lefnei Rabbi Chia shana lo stam v'sav v'shiyavin Rav she'in iser ela menika v'lo haven. So Rashi over here helps us out in terms of the relationship. When Rabbi Chiya taught Rav the halacha, Rabbi Chiya was only referencing a oversaturated udder. And Rav didn't understand the subtlety of Rabbi Chiya's point. Rabbi Chiya thought that everyone was as sharp as he was. And, you know, clearly that wasn't the case. And I know we're talking about Rav, which is why I'm a little bit hesitant in saying this. But everything is relative. And we're speaking here, relatively speaking. Relative to Rabbi Chiya, so Rabbi Chiya was extraordinarily sharp. And so Rav didn't understand the subtleties and nuances of, he wasn't talking about every udder. He was talking about an udder that was highly saturated in milk. And so that's why, and that's why Rav thought that in general we should be machmir by udders, and that's another version of the story. And the Gemara now goes through other menhagim.
The woman wanted to add more milk.
No. It's a totally different version. In other words, according to this version of the story, this has nothing to do with the overheard discussion. Nothing to do with it. Just a totally different explanation in terms of how Rav arrived at a chumah. Rabbi Cheshan Alei Khalstam. Rav and Rav Yisrael bar Yosef Iklu Lebe Rav Papi, Aisel HaKamei Tavshila Dekhal. And so the Gemara now continues telling us stories about Amoraim and their attitudes towards Chal. So you had a number of Amoraim go to the house of Rav Papi, and a Chal was being served, and Rav Yisrael bar Yosef Achal, Rav and Lo Achal. And the Amoraim literally split on the issue of whether or not they should be eating it or not eating it. Rav Yitzchak ate it. Ravin did not eat it. Amar Abai, Ravin Techla, Amailo Achal. So Abai says to Ravin, now why are you not eating it? Now, I'm not going to ignore, I'm going to mostly ignore that he called him Ravin Techla. Ravin Techla seems to be a very caustic way to describe anybody, right? Ravin, who does not have children, or who he lost his children. Okay, it is a challenging way to describe somebody, but okay, but anyway, let's move on. I'll just leave it at, it's really challenging. But anyway, Amailo Achal. So I understand, you're not eating the udder, why not? So Mechti, Devasai, Dera Papi, Barta, Dera Yitzchak Nafcha. Okay, let me remind you, who's cooking it right now? We're talking about the wife of Rav Papi, who's none other than the daughter of Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, Marye de Uvdahava. So, and Rav Yitzchak Nafcha is a very special person, right? And he was Zahir B'masim Tovim, meaning he was extraordinarily careful person when it comes to halacha. And he loved Yishmi Alami, Beinasha Lohava Avda. She didn't make this up that you're allowed to cook the udder and eat the udder. She heard it from her father's house. She grew up in a very religious home. So if she's preparing chal, it must be okay to eat. Okay. And that's all we get from that story. We don't get any back and forth. Did he agree? Did he not agree? Did he accept the argument? Did he not accept the argument? We're done. Besur lo achle kachle, in the town of Sur, they did not eat chal. And again, like I mentioned, various menhagim amongst various amoraim, and now we can add to that various communities in terms of whether or not chal was eaten or not. In Sur, they did not eat chal, but Pumbedisa achle kachle, in the town of Pumbedisa, they did eat chal. They ate the udder.
Right?
Yeah, but again, these are various menhagim. But you're good, huh? Yeah.
Rami.
No, Sura. Okay. Rami Bar Tamri Dehu Rami Bar Dikula Mi Pumpadisa Ekla Lasura. Gemara tells a phenomenal story where one of the Amoraim of Pumpadisa goes now to the town of Sura B'mali Yom Kippur and he's there on Erev Yom Kippur. Of course, there is a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur and there's a minig to eat meat. And so, Afkinu Kule Amala Kachlinu. Now, this is the town of Pumpadisa and in this town, we don't eat udder. That's not our minig. So they all shech their animals on Erev Yom Kippur in order to eat fresh meat on Erev Yom Kippur, but they're throwing out the udders. And there is now the man from Sura, Rami Bar Tamre, and the man from Sura, and he's going now around town, and he's just simply collecting udders. And, right, I'll take that, thank you very much, thank you, so, right, give me your discards. And he's now collecting udders. Sorry, I read this. Shadino azol iu naktinu, and he took them, achlinu, and he ate them all. Now, this is, of course, very strange behavior because although he does come from the town of Pumbedisa, and although the town in which he comes from, it's mutter, it's totally permissible to eat the udder. I'm sorry, thank you. Good correction. So he comes from the town of Sura, but nevertheless, though, now he is eating the udders in Pumpadisa, where the minig there is not to eat it. So I still come into Rav Chista. So they bring it in front of Rav Chista, and basically they're calling him out. Like, we don't do this here, and you're here. And if we don't do this here, you shouldn't do it either. Also they come into Rav Chista, Amale Amai Tavid Achi, Amale Maaser de Rav Yehuda Ana. I'm going to remind you, I come from the town of Rav Yehuda, Dachel. We eat the udder. So in other words, from where I come from, this is totally permissible. Amalei velei velei slach nosnem alav chumei amakam shiatzim hashem v'chumei amakam shalach l'sham. And the Gemara now over here is, Rav Chista is referencing the fourth parak of Psachim. In the fourth parak of Psachim, the Gemara over there makes it extraordinarily clear. When it comes to minhagim, so what minhagim should you adopt? Right, the chumras of whichever minhag it is. Meaning, if you're coming from a town where there was a certain chumra, and you leave town, you go somewhere else, you should keep by that chumra. Right? You come from Eretz, I'm not paskening. But you come from Chutz Lars, you go to Eretz Yisrael. So your minhag is to keep 2 days of Yontif, you should keep 2 days of Yontif. Right? And the opposite, and what about the opposite? Meaning, and what if you go to a place where they have a particular chumrah in a particular town? So even though it's not your chumrah, but if you're in that town, you have to abide by that chumrah. The fourth parak of Psachim goes over numerous examples of this idea. So they say to him, number one, I know you come from a place where they eat chal, but you're currently in a place where we don't eat chal. So do us a favor. When in Rome, so Amar Lei Chutzut Chum Achaltino, and as we're going to find out. So this Rami Bar Dikula is really bright, exceptional. He had an answer for everything. And so the Gemara starts off with, well, you know, when I ate it, I was chutzut chum, I was outside the tchum. Meaning I collected it here in the town, that part's true, right, guilty as charged, but I did not eat it here. I went outside of tchum, and therefore I was not within the chumra samakum. Over matevatino, I was and now back and forth. So Rav Chista said, and how did you roast it? Where did you get the fuel? Amarle, bit portzani. So he says, well, I found these grape seeds. Oh, really interesting, grape seeds. V'dilma miyayin esach havia. So he says, well, these grape seeds, couldn't have they been the products of yayin esach? We know that yayin esach has asr ba'achila uvehana'a. You're not allowed to get benefit from yayin esach. And we're talking about the grape seed of yayin esach. You can't use it. He says, well, it was after 12 months. They are so dehydrated. They're so dried from any type of grape residue. It's totally fine. V'dilma digazo hava. How do you know that these weren't stolen? So Amalei Yeush Balim Hava. No, he says, I know that there was Yeush that occurred. Dekatchu Behu Chilfe. So the, right, they were, I'm sorry, right, Rashi describes that they were so old and they were rotted, right, so that there was really no way that the owners were figuring that they're going to get it back. Chazit Elohave Manach Tefillah. Now, once again, now the dialogue between Rav Chista and this Rami Bar Dikula. So he sees that Rami Bar Dikula is not wearing tefillin. Amar lei, my time alow, manach to tefillin. How come you're not wearing tefillin? I don't understand. So Amar lei, chole me ayinhu. So he says, well, the reason why, to be honest with you, is because I got stomach issues. I'm in and out of the bathroom all the time. Rebbe at the end of his life. You remember the Gemara in Ksuvos, where the Gemara gives a very powerful description of him going in and out of the bathroom and him having to take off his tefillin. By the way, interesting. Rebbe, in other words, despite the fact that he also had bathroom issues, but in other words, he tried to the best of his ability to put him on and take him off before he went to the bathroom, even though required to take him on and put him off all the time. But anyway, he says, basically, I do not have enough bowel control movement, and therefore I can't wear my tefillin. V'am Rav Yudah cholim ayin patim in a tefillin. Chazid lo havaka rami chute. He wasn't wearing tzitzis. So amalei my tam alei sechute. So he says, you know, I see you're wearing a four-corner garment, but you don't have tzitzis on your four-corner garment. What's going on over there? And again, like I pointed out, he had an answer to everything. Amar lei talas she'ula hiva amar Rav Yehuda. He says it's a bar talas. And talas she'ula kol shoshim yom peturim min hatzitzis. And we know the halach is that a bar talas is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzis. Okay, good. An answer for everything. Really interesting tosus over here. I'm not going to go through the entirety of it, obviously, but take a look at the top of the tosus over here. Talas she'ula peturim kol shoshim yom. Mid araisa petur la'olam. A bar talis really me'ikar hadin never has the requirement of tzitzis. The Kedram Rebreshis, I guess, we're going to see this later in our Masechta, right, about a month from now, approximately. Kisus chavalo shel acherim. Your garment needs tzitzis, but somebody else's garment that you're borrowing does not need tzitzis. Elefish neirs kishalo chayvu chachamim mishloshim ve'elach. However, because of her perception, right, you've been now wearing this garment for a long time. right? That's some borrowing, right? Right? You sure you borrowed it? Maybe it's yours. And when you're wearing something for such a long time, people will think that it belongs to you, and therefore the chachamim required that after 30 days you put it on. And you know, people don't, generally speaking, borrow something for more than 30 days. Okay. I have some people who are holding on to some of my svarim. I'm just reminding myself they need a phone call. Anyway, do I make a bracha on a borrowed talis with tzitzis? So that's also here in Tosfos as well. I'm skipping down a little bit, like about 10 lines down. So I'm going to skip now a little bit more. So interesting. Tosfos says, I know, and again, this is Lashita, so this is consistent with Tosfos' general position. I know that our women make a bracha on a mitzvah that they're not obligated in, right? If they're singing the sukkah, they're going to make a bracha. Good. He says, but I don't think we're going to make a bracha on a tal shu'ula. Why not? Because when it comes to a sukkah, look, the woman's not obligated, but other people are obligated. So in other words, it's shaykh to make a bracha on a sukkah, and if a woman wants to opt in doing the mitzvah, she, by all means, and she'll make a bracha. Masha in kain, when it comes to a tal shu'ula, nobody's obligated in the mitzvah of Tal Sheula. So once the starting point is nobody's obligated, so then no bracha should be made. Okay, anyway, really interesting discussion regarding the Tal Sheula and Tosfos. And again, I just highlighted some of the highlights of the Tosfos. Adahachi, back to the Gemara, second line down. Adahachi, Aisula, Ugava, Delohava, Moker, Avua, Vime. There was a person who was negligent on the mitzvah of Kibra Ve'im. So kaftuho. So what did they do? So what they used to do back in the good old days. So they tied him up and they're going to give him malchus. So amalu shafku. So this Rami Bar Tikula says, you know what? No malchus. Leave him alone. Don't give him malchus. Why? The Tanya called mitzvah says shemat tzchar b'tfida ain based in shlamat muzar nalav. Because we know that when you have a mitzvah in the Torah where the Torah tells us what the reward is going to be for doing this mitzvah. So we don't need to incentivize them anymore. They've already been properly incentivized by the fact that Torah gives them a reward. And by the way, Rashi, what I just said, so the Rashi says it clearly. Rashi says, right, Shematan Schar B'tzidah, Laman Yarichu Yamecha, Lekach Pir Shematan Schar Lomar, Im Lo Tekeimene Zehu Onsho, Shelo Titol Schar Zeh. Already the Torah tells you what's in store and what you're missing out if you don't do this mitzvah. Okay. Amar lechazin alach decharif tatuva. So finally, Rav Chisda says to Rami Bar Tikula, you're really smart. Meaning, I've asked you question after question, and you've had an answer for everything. And not just an answer, but a good answer, a legitimate answer for every one of my questions. And you even corrected us in our practice of, you know, you stopped us from giving malchus to a person, and you were right. So let me ask you a question. You're so smart. You're so smart. So Amalei Shavkut the Tanakh goes Muzar Nalav. Amalei Chazin Lach the Charif the Tuva. Amalei Ihavya Baasrei the Rav Yehuda Achvin Lachur Pai. So he says, look, I'm not even at my home court right now. right now, I'm playing an away game. Right? If I went back home and I was more comfortable and I was with my Rebbe and I was in my hometown, right. I'd really show you how sharp I was. Okay. Yeah. Rashi in the top of the Amud. Rashi writes, "Ala Amud La Kosek at the time by Medvar Mum Darban Vesulo be Mitzvahs Losa Say Shekvar Nasas Avera." Ava Mitzvahs Essay. Rashi is quoting the Gemara in Suvas. When it comes to a positive commandment, Ve'ena Rotsa La Kamak Agon Amram Lo Say Sukkah Ve'ena Osa Asay Lula Ve'ena Osa Makana Asa Shetetz Dinafsho. So, in other words, to incentivize somebody, to properly motivate the person to do the mitzvah, so you keep hitting him. Now, the language over there of the Gemara is Ashitetze Nafsho. It's a strong language, Danny, admittedly. Meaning, and if you end up killing him, it kind of would, you know, undercut the point of trying to incentivize him. Anyway, probably the Gemara over there doesn't literally mean Ashitetze Nafsho, but it just basically means, right. In other words, we're trying to help you over here. Okay, let's pause over here in the Gemara. Next part of the Gemara starts with a new topic. We're going to start in Kaved. The Sugya of Kaved really starts Amalei Abaye. The next words, we'll start tomorrow with the Kaved. Tomorrow, Liver Talk.